me and Perimeter for the invitation to this conference. So I'm going to present some work we have done with Florent Girel and Stefano Liberati in CISA about emerging gravity. You can find, if you want, online on the archive, two papers I'm referring to. So the plan of the talk is simple. I will give first a very generic overview of the motivation for looking for emerging gravity, partly some of the material I want to tell you, to present to you is already, has been already given and discussed by Daniele. Then I will go for the presentation of the first model I want to describe, that is a model of emergent modified Newtonian gravity in a Bose-Einstein condensate. And then the second model will be just a discussion of the relativistic generalization of this one, and the relation between this relativistic case, so-called not from gravity, that I will go to briefly mention later, and then I will present the conclusion of this one. First of all, then, let me discuss briefly the emergent gravity scenario, giving you some motivation for that. So, you know very well, the problem is taking general relativity and make it compatible with quantum mechanics. So, in doing this operation, people have had to revisit all the foundational issues that are at the basis of GR and quantum mechanics. Let me put the, if you want, let me put the finger towards two intriguing aspects that you have already in classical general relativity. The first one, that one that was seen already in the 70s, was the relation between black hole physics, black hole mechanics, and the laws of the principle of thermodynamics, showing this was the Bardeen-Carpenhoffi paper about that was the first link between classical general relativity and thermodynamics. Even more strikingly, recently by Jacobson and his collaborators, it has been established a precise relation between Einstein equation and thermodynamics in this sense. Einstein equation in the derivation of Jacobson has just obtained, if you want, as an equation of state in a thermodynamic setting. So they are really emerging from a thermodynamic tree. Then I want to mention also the analog models, and these are this is the area in which I'm presently working with the Stefano and Florian. These analog models are typically condensed factor system models in which there is a pseudo-Riemannian metric that is emerging in a system where there is no pseudo-Riemannian metric in the built-in at the beginning. So, in this sense, all these pieces of evidence are telling you, look, there are hints that in GR, the theory is different from GR, that somehow the metric could be some sort of thermodynamic or hydrodynamical quantity, not a fundamental one. And this, in a certain sense, is this point of view is supported by what people find trying to quantize the classical theory of gravity, in the sense that one has to throw away the metric and replace it with some other structure that is more easy to quantize. In this sense, what I want to tell you is that GR, at the end of the day, could be just an emergent theory, so not a kind of thermodynamical theory, not a fundamental one, and we have some reasons to think that this could be the case. Of course, could be just that we are not able to technically deal with the fundamental gravitational degrees of freedom, and instead there is a fundamental manifold, if you want, for the generic structure. But there could be a more intriguing situation in which the fundamental degrees of freedom are completely different. In this sense, this is the picture that you typically have is condensed matter, which is the most close, if you want, subject to this approach of emergent gravity. This. You have some microscopic degrees of freedom, then you have some a little very, this is a plethora of way in which you can reorganize the intercept degrees of freedom to go to macroscopic degrees of freedom. Okay? And in this sense, could be the case that gravity, GR, classical general distance here, has exactly this, is originated exactly from one of these, or if you can cook up any other mechanism. A mechanism for emergence from microscopic to macroscopic. So there is a really, I don't want to do a review of the status, the present status of emergent gravity. Just I wanted to say that there is quite a number of people working on that. What I want really to focus on is the so-called analog models for gravity. This is what I was playing with during my PhD. So the idea is very simple. It was noticed by Uhuru and later by Visser that when you take a very simple system, which is an inviscid barotropic fluid, so you have the continuity equation and the Euler equation with an equation of state, which is of the barotropic type, under the condition that the flow is irrotational, so that the velocity can be written as the gradient or the potential. When you look at the linearization around some background configuration, so sound waves, if you want, in the fluid, you get an interesting result, that the equation for the sound waves essentially is exactly a Klein-Gordon equation for a massless field. The field in this case that you are playing with is the potential that gives rise to the velocity. A Klein-Gordon equation over a metric, over a manifold, and though with a curved Lorentzian metric, which is called the acoustic metric, which has this form. Okay, in this case, it is interesting to notice that the background space-time is a Galilean space-time, and the effective one, the one that is relevant for the dynamics of the perturbations, is Lorentzian. So there is really a four-dimensional metric. However, of course, this is only an analogy that is valid at the kinematical level. So what you can cook up is you play with the setup of the flow of the fluid in such a way to control the background density and the background velocity potential in such a way to realize some curved geometry, curved metric. But this metric, of course, will not be a solution of the Einstein equation. So the analogy that has been discussed is only at the kinematical level. What is very, very important at this point to say is that this kinematical analogy can be extended to cases in which we can also discuss some quantum field theories in curved space-time, and this is the case of Bose-Einstein condensate. Okay, Bose-Einstein condensates are systems described by field operators representing the atoms. Okay, there is an Hamiltonian, second quantized Hamiltonian, and you describe the condensation of this system by saying, okay, that the field operator corresponding to the atoms develops a vacuum expectation value, small psi, and in such a way that these field operator can be split into a condensed part and into a fluctuation part. Okay, you have the equation of motion for the condensate. The equation of motion comes just from the Hamiltonian, is the Gross-Piotrowski equation. And from this equation, you can evaluate the property of the condensate. So let me stress now, at this point, this feature. The second quantization scheme basically works with a Fock space. The Fock space is just the Fock space of the atoms, okay? So there will be an atomic Fock vacuum, zero, that corresponds to the state in which there are no atoms on the in the system. However, the ground state corresponding to the condensed state is this one. It is not state with zero atoms. So this is a difference that now I'm going to discuss. So the analogy with the metric, with the Lorentzian metric, works exactly as in the fluid case, apart from a minor difference. So again, you split somehow the wave function of the condensate into density and a phase that represents essentially the velocity through a gradient, okay? And you find out that the quasi-particles, the excitations above the condensate, move in a curved metric that has basically the same structure of the acoustic one of the perfect fluid with a difference. This is true now only for a small wave number. If you go at high wave number, given the properties of the Hamiltonian described in the Bose-Einstein condensate, at the end of the day, you will see this picture will break and you will see the Galilean spacetime. But for small momentum, the phonons are propagating exactly in this method. And of course, these phonons are quantum particles, are quantum described by quantum fields. So in principle, and now even in at least in numerical simulations, you can test some interesting effects of quantum field theory in curved space-time that were out of reach for experimental testing, if you want. So the first, the most important, I think, is the possibility of testing Hawking radiation. This has been done numerically by Fagnocchi and collaborators. And then there is the issue of cosmological particle creation discussed by Sikke Weinfurth and collaborators, and also the same group is studying what happens when there are signature change events in space-time. So this is a situation, but again, these are just kinematical phenomena. No, I'm not using in any place some sort of Einstein equation. Of course, what is determining the background geometry is the set of the fluid equation. Okay. However, the fact that we up to now we are not able to discuss some sort of dynamical analogy of GR is not a good reason for not trying to do that. Instead, what we have done is the following. Instead of looking for some sort of covariant form of gravitation, so like instead of looking for some sort of generalization eventually of Einstein equation, we look for some more easy task, that is to try to reproduce in this system some sort of Newtonian gravity. So as I told you, the quasi-particles moving in the Bose-Einstein condensate are massless. So massless quasi-particles are a bit difficult to embed into a Newtonian regime. So what we have done is to study a system in which we modify the fundamental Hamiltonian of the system in such a way to have massive quasi-particles. And this is done just by adding a term like that. Okay, it's very simple. And actually, if you want, I can give you later a reference about a concrete physical system in which the Bose-Einsteins do have this kind of massive quasi-particles. When you introduce this modified Hamiltonian operator, of course, you have to modify the equation of motion that here I presented for convenience. Here I have the equation for the condensate wave function. See, there is the part corresponding to the Hamiltonian acting directly on the condensate wave function. And then I have some sort of back reacting terms here in which the wave function of the condensate get coupled to the quasi particles of the, really here are the atoms outside of the condensate in this way through this expectation value. The other field equation that I need is the field equation for the atom outside the condensate, and this is the linearized part that will be an interaction part, but I'm not interested in that now. So
the quasi-particles must be now rederived again to understand what is the physical content of this system. You have to choose a background configuration. You go for a constant condensate, homogeneous condensate with a phase fixed to zero by stability reason. Then you look at it. Here is the Fourier transform of the equation of motion for the field of the atom outside of the condensate. You see there is a mixing between the annihilation and creation operators. And to undo this mixing, in order to find the propagating modes, you have to do a Bogoliubov transformation, okay, and introduce the quasi-particle fields. And for these quasi-particle fields, then you find the spectrum that is of this form. So here is the spectrum written with the microscopic quantities, and you can easily see that this spectrum has a very simple interpretation, a very simple form. This would be the spectrum of the quasi-particles of the standard DC. Here we are adding a mass term. So these kind of quasi-particles are really the ones that we need in order to describe some sort of modified Newtonian dynamics, because essentially in the low energy, in the low momentum limit of this spectrum will become just the one of a non-relativistic particle with mass m. Okay. So I need to identify the gravitational potential, of course, through this analogy. And to make a long story short, I can tell you that the potential is encoded essentially in the modification of in the fluctuation of the amplitude of the condensate wave function, not in the phase. The phase does other things. To prove this, it is enough that you look at the definition of the of the Newtonian limit of the acoustic metric, and that that tells you that H not naught is proportional to U of X, and finally to identify the constant of proportionality between U, small u, and the gravitational potential, you have to compare what the Hamiltonian of the quasi particles that now I've written here in the low energy momentum. Clearly, the situation is slightly different from the homogeneous case because the condensate is no more homogeneous. So this is just the first order approximation. One for going in to higher orders in U and also in the momentum, I should do a more careful analysis. But this is just, say, the first order treatment. So you see that U here appears just as an external potential. Okay, so in order to identify the gravitational potential here, I compare this term here with M pi graph, that is the way in which the gravitational potential enters the Hamiltonian for a non-relativistic particle, and then I fix this constant of proportionality. Then I go back to the equation of motion, this one for the condensate here, plugging back all these things. And I see that in the static limit, so suppressing the time dependence, I get differential operator, linear differential operator acting on U equal to something related to the quasi-particle content. Okay? Now, to really understand what is the quasi-particle content, I have to replace, here, remember, these expectation values. These are expectation values involving the chi fields, which are the atoms outside of the condensate, not the quasi-particle. But quasi-particles are obtained from this via a Bogoliubov transformation. So when you implement a Bogoliubov transformation, okay, you get something interesting. You get same differential operator acting on U equal to contribution of real quasi-particles. So if there are no quasi-particles, you are in the ground state. This term is zero. Plus a kind of vacuum term, which is there, which is related to the fact that these expectation values are different from zero, even if there are no quasi-particles. And this is due to the fact that these operators, chi and chi dagger, are not annihilating the ground state, because the, what they are annihilating is the FOC, the ground state of the, is the zero state of the FOC space, of the atomic FOC space. Another interesting thing that I'm getting here is that these terms here are essentially proportional to the number of atoms which are outside of the condensate. So if I organize, I could, in principle, present a treatment of Bose-Einstein condensation as an expansion 1 over n, where n is the number of atoms in the condensate, essentially, you see that these terms in this kind of treatments are naturally of order 1 over n. So they are suppressed by the condensation. Now, I have everything to rewrite the Bogoliubov-Dejean equation, essentially, as a non-relativistic equation for a... kind of modification of the Poisson equation for the non-relativistic Newtonian potential. So I have rewritten here the differential operator acting in the gravitational potential. Here I have the contribution of the true quasi-particles, the real quasi-particles, and here I have the quantum contribution, the vacuum contribution. Okay, here are the expressions in terms of the microscopic parameters. Let me stress two things. First, of course, this potential here will be short range because of this term here. So the potential will be Yukawa-like, not 1 over R. So it is short range, and the range of this potential, it is given by the Keeling length. The Keeling length is a microscopic parameter telling you the elasticity, essentially, the scale of elasticity of the condensate wave function. And this scale, if you want, represents some sort of ultraviolet, not cutoff, but ultraviolet scale that tells you when the physics of phonons or quasi particles boils down to the physics of atoms. So what I want to say is that for energies proportional to the inverse Keeling length, essentially your quasi particles boils down to the atom. Another important point is that due to the fact that the Bogoliubov transformation is non-local, this contribution here is non-local. That is to say, if you give me the wave function of the distribution of quasi-particles, this rho matter will not be just the modulus square of the wave function or the modulus square multiplied by the mass. Okay, this quantity will, the wave function of the quasi particle will be convoluted with some distribution functions that are related to the Bogoliubov transformation. So this equation is apparently innocent, but is very tricky. So of course, at this point, I can start summarizing the things that I have. So I have a short range version of a Newtonian gravity in this modified BC. So the hope of having some sort of generalized or simplified Einstein equations was completely non-motivated. I have an important feature that the gravitational field is encoded in the condensate. Okay, the matter field is encoded in the non-condensate fraction, so they are on two different levels, matter and gravity. I have a mismatch, as I was telling you, between the notion of locality that you build with the atoms and the notion of locality that you build with quasi particles, and this is due to the fact that there is a Bogoliubov transformation in the middle that is a non-local transformation. I have a very nice feature that I have a cosmological constant arising from my game. Maybe I forgot to tell you. I use this lambda precisely because this is the way in which the cosmological constant enters the Newtonian limit of the linearized Einstein equation with a cosmological constant. Okay. So this cosmological constant is unavoidable because it is unavoidable that the quasi-particle vacuum and the particle vacuum are different, but it is naturally suppressed. So there is a term of for the 1 over n in front of it that suppresses this vacuum. N is the number of atoms in general that you have. So in the whole space, typically you have condensation, so you have n atoms in total, and not atoms condensed, but the number of atoms which are non-condensed basically is 1. Okay? So basically this is 1 over n, the fraction of the atoms which are non-condensed over the atoms which are condensed. Okay? Let me now pass to the second model, of course. Here we have done the non-relativistic case. Can we do something relativistic? The answer is no, not in the way we have done the, we have treated the Bose-Einstein condensate. However, we got a surprise when we passed discussing the what would be the natural classical generalization to the relativistic case of a system like a Bose-Einstein condensate. So we took just a multiple of scalar fields, massless scalar fields, and we tried to play with them in order to see if something happened. There is, in these kind of systems, this ON symmetry playing the role of global gauge symmetry. This symmetry suggests to split the variables in this way. So I split the multiplet into the modulus plus, essentially a multiplet with unit modulus. Here we are using a length square as a unit, as the fixed modulus of this multiplet. And if you use this parametrization, your equation of motion takes the following form, which is not very, I mean, this is just a box mod phi equal to 0, rewritten in this base, in this basis. Okay, so this is not very, very, very nice. I mean, it's not very, very clear what is the content of this equation. But if you let me introduce this metric here, if you make me note that the Ricci scalar is built for this metric, just this guy here, I can rewrite the same equations of motion in this way. So box with respect to G, not of theta, the flat space time, the flat inequality space time, pi I equals 0. I have the constraint on the modulus. And then I have the equation of motion, which is Ricci scalar equal to constant times the trace of the stress energy tensor. These are the equation of motion of Nordstrom gravity coupled to what? To a nonlinear sigma model. This is just a nonlinear sigma model. Okay? And what is Nordstrom gravity? Nordstrom gravity was a theory of gravity proposed by Nordstrom before GR. Nordstrom just took the most simple generalization of relativistic generalization of the Poisson equation. So instead of taking the Laplacian phi equals 0 or equal to rho, took box phi equal to g, and then basically playing with these, you can arrive to this kind of equation. Ricci scalar equal to 6 over, equal to, that will be 24 pi g, g newton stress energy tensor, and then the equation of motion for the field. What is interesting, this is very simple, not very interesting per se. What is interesting is that I can write the equation of motion then for the multiplet of massless scalar fields in flat Minkowski space-time in this way. So I implemented the fact that the metric is conformally flat by asking that the wild tensor is 0. I have the equation of motion for the gravitational field here. I have the equation of motion for the matter fields here. Okay, so the matter field propagating on the metric G. And I have the constraint on the matter fields that must be normalized in that way. So let me notice one thing. These guys are massless. There is no mass term for them. But this does not mean they don't see the metric G. Okay, so massless is not equivalent to conformally coupled. Okay, the photon is conformally coupled, so if I had a photon inside this game, I would be able to see the flat background given by Minkowski space-time. Here, I have just massless pair of fields that are not able to see eta mu nu, they see G mu nu. Okay. Let me comment on another thing. The most important part, actually, of this model I was missing, is that written in this way, you realize that, okay, these equations are just diffeomorphisms invariant. Okay, I'm able to write in this example, I showed you that there can be cases in which you can write something which is not manifestly diffeomorphism invariant in a form which is manifestly diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, let me stress what is essentially the core of the problem that forbids you from taking just the BC and doing the generalization to the relativistic case. The relativistic case, here you see, you remember in the case of the BC, matter was essentially represented by the quasi particles, gravity was inside the condensate. So they were on two different levels. In this case, gravity and matter are essentially in the same multiple, in the same object. So this is the reason why the trivial extension to the relativistic case of the BEC was failing. Now, let me make another comment. As I told you, okay, that the equation of motion for a massless set of massless scalar fields can be cast into a diffeomorphism invariant way. I told you that there is no conformally coupled field, so the fact that there is a background in Minkowski space-time there is not of interest. All the fields see the metric G, not the metric eta. And this means that if you have a model, whatever, we have played with a model living in space, but you can cook, this means that you can cook up whatever model you want. If you have some sort of systems like this, so in a regime you end up with a set of massless scalar fields, you have an emergent, you have a system in which you have an emergent diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, so he's telling you that diffeomorphism invariants, that is one of the fundamental features of GR, might be not as that fundamental at all. I mean, you can eventually realize some system in which diffeomorphism invariant is only an emergent concept. Eventually, it will be approximated, but then and then you will see the physics beyond diffeomorphism invariant or invariance, I would say. But this is an important point. So let me summarize, given that I presented what I wanted to say. So we have seen that in Bose-Einstein systems, I can cook up some sort of dynamical analogy with Newtonian gravity, at least. This is not per se a very big result, but it is interesting what is coming besides these results. So the fact that there is a notion of micro locality, if you want, the one due to the atoms, and the fact that there is a notion of macroscopic locality, the one due to the collective excitations called quasi particles, photons, and that these are distinct objects and they are distinct in concepts. Okay. Then the other nice thing that I have to give to you is that in this kind of models, in this BC system, I was able to generate a cosmological constant. Okay? And this cosmological constant is generated through the inequivalence between the Fock vacuum and the ground state of the system. Okay? And this inequivalence is fundamentally due to the fact that you have an interacting system. Okay? But what is, in my opinion, more interesting is that this cosmological constant is naturally suppressed by the condensation mechanism. So this means that if you remember what I told before, this cosmological constant has 1 over n in front of it. This 1 over n is the ratio between the non-condensed fraction and the condensed fraction. And this means that the more condensation you have, the smaller is the cosmological constant in your model. This is nice because this is another way in which you can suppress a cosmological term, cosmological constant term, if you don't know how to suppress it with any other mean. Then, passing to the relativistic case, I've shown you how I can play with things which look innocent and end up with a theory, with a metric theory of gravity that is background independent and can give rise to models in which the diffeomorphism invariance is an emergent constant. With this, I conclude with one remark. I mean, clearly these models per se are not very interesting for the actual details of modified theories of gravity which want to be realistic. So I'm not telling you, I got Newtonian gravitational potential in a Bose-Einstein condensate, and this must be the description of true gravitational interaction. Also, the example of the relativistic case, is very simple. There is just a conformal gravitational interaction. It's not very, very interesting. It cannot reproduce all the details of the gravitational interaction that we know. But connecting with what Daniele said before, this is showing you that the mechanism of emergence can, so the way in which you pass from microscopic to macroscopic quantities can be so tricky that you start with some innocent things and you find out very, very intriguing features like small cosmological constants, like background independence, like diffeomorphism invariance. So. And with this, I close. Yeah. Thank you.
Some questions, so go on.
I have a question concerning this notion of default invariant.
Yeah.
What sense is that different from? Imagine that I make a usual field theory on a flat background. I can write it in a default invariant by saying I couple it to an arbitrary background, but this background satisfies Riemann equal to zero. But that's not,
I understand your point. You can write Klein-Gordon equation in a different invariant way, just writing box G something equal to zero, Riemann equal to zero. This is the most simple that pops to my mind. What I can tell you is that. The fact that this is not a mere, I got confused, parametrization or deparametrization of the equation of motion, is due to the fact that the metric G is actually something physical. The observers, in the relativistic case, in this analogy, will be made by this fluctuation phi. So there will be clocks and rods through this equation of motion, okay? So they will really see the metric G. This will not be just the parameterization, it is just uncovering in this field definition the way in which the observers would, in this model, would define their notion of spatial and temporal relations for the metric. Okay. I just
it's okay. The same thing would be true if you put the harmony in the wall.
But then, r mu equal to 0, you have just the spot metric. There is no content there. I mean, here I have more than one solution. No?
Michael?
Yeah, just curiosity. So in Nordstrom theory, all your solutions are conformal to
locally conformal, yes.
Now, the fluid there, in general, the fluid based metrics, or the metrics which a fluid could simulate, you showed earlier, are they all conformal to
This is the relativistic case. Let me look in a non relativistic case. In a non relativistic case, here the metric is forced, for instance, to be spatially flat. Okay? So, for instance, care cannot be simulated with the fluid analogs. Okay? Because there is no spatially flat section there. But these metrics are not necessarily conformally flat. They can be very quick. Let me think if there is a non-trivial example. For instance, vortex geometries, which have fluids rotating around perhaps central core, there clearly the element is non-conformally flat. So here the geometrical structure is a bit richer than the relativistic case. 14
first. So you have this mismatch between the macro locality and the effective. So assuming that your simple model captures something or is kind of correct in this aspect, what kind of quantum phenomenology would that give me? Do I get some high energy effect?
The fact in this Bose-Einstein condensate, this micro-macro thing is related to the fact that there is a Google-Hugo transformation in the middle, and that the Google-Hugo transformation is related to the fact that the Hamiltonian is not a free Hamiltonian. Okay, there is an interaction term that makes possible the Bose-Einstein condensate to fall. Now, as a consequence of the presence of this Hamiltonian, there is the fact that there is a modified dispersion relation. Okay, so you see, suppose that now I have forgotten the non-relativistic case and I'm living in a special relativistic regime. At large energy, that we see this correction to start to dominate. Okay, so this is the most simple thing that I can imagine to associate this kind of mismatch between the micro and the macro world. However, for the locality, one should look probably to the correlation functions then. Okay, and then look at the the properties of the correlation functions, if they exhibit locality or not.
So you have not looked at that?
No, we have not, because that was not the point of the work, was just to get to the Poisson equation.
All right, one final question.
So there have been some proposals recently on seeing the analog of the Unruh effect in condensates and alkaline gases experimentally. I'm just wondering, are there any new experiments?
With these kind of things, I don't know if there are actual experiments. The result about optic radiation, that I mentioned, is a numerical result. So the people did the numerical simulation of the evolution of a Bose-Einstein condensate and look at the correlation function of the quasi particles when an horizon, a sonic horizon, is formed. Okay. When there are attempts to do that with an actual Bose-Einstein condensate, okay. The point what is that for a reasonable condensate, the Hawking temperature of the radiation that is the effect that you want to see is much smaller than the temperature of the condensate. the condensate is not exactly zero. Yet you can cool it up to some nanokelvins, hundreds of nanokelvins. But the working radiation for the realistic configuration will be the order of the nanokelvin. So it will be totally dominated by the thermal effect of the environment. So to do that, I don't know about this other effect in the lab, but for the Bose-Einstein condensate, I can tell you that it's very, very, very difficult to see in the lab. But probably in a few years from now, there will be some experiment, and we can do this test in the laboratory in a very clear way. The technology is coming close to that point. Probably we could look at protein radiation directly in the Bose-Einstein process. I don't know any other experimental groups doing this kind of thing. So maybe later we can tell me if you.
All right, let's thank the speaker again.